Poetry, I see, is part of a larger process that just like gives transcendent value to the otherwise profane things.
In my poetry and my life, sexuality serves a lot of different functions. I'm really interested in like the liberatory possibilities of sexuality and exploring sexuality, and also the relationship between oppression and fascism, and also liberation and sexuality. But I think, you know, to me, like poetry is like the lyric of like the human spirit.
Hi, I'm Bianca Stone, and welcome to the Roostone House podcast. I'm talking to two poets today, Ben Fama and Chariot Wish. Ben Fama is the author of numerous collections of poetry, most recently Death Wish from Newest York, and he's editor of Wonder Books, based in New York City, publishers of innovative poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. And one of their newest chapbooks is A New Heaven and a New Earth by Chariot Wish. So I was thrilled to have them both on here to discuss this new chapbook and putting it together and reading us some poems. So thank you both so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Stoked to have this convo.
So Chariot, I thought you could start us off by reading one of the poems from the new chap.
So yeah, this one is called Teorema. Transcendentally stoned, song off a balcony, hand through his hair as it falls on the floor. Panting on my back, I said, holes aren't longing to be filled. Oh wait, yeah, what about the one that stretched so far overnight? Slouched in your dimming light, crying while making out with the most beautiful man. Terminal walk up a mountain, grace of degeneracy, being the body around an anus. Wanted to pee on you in a loving way, worst loss of all. What arrow to the back of the head? Why this urgency? Unrolling the link of your puissance. Don't know what the deposit body of the earth is. Fags know death, live close to death. The shape of your neck is real. This kind of waiting is the love itself. I don't care what you meant. A long black glove slides over history.
A long black glove slides over history.
It's almost like a. Well, tell me what the title means.
Yeah, so Teorema is it's the title actually of a Pasolini film.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, I think it was like one of the first times Ben and I met and like hung out and talked. He recommended it to me. And I actually don't think, Ben, you still haven't ever watched it, have you?
Watched the first half and it was stressing me out.
Wait, I thought you just said Fama and recommended it to you,
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
but you
I
haven't watched
mentioned it as on my
the
to
whole thing.
watch
You're like, you
list.
should watch this because I can't.
I was like, I just heard about this Pasolini film that I've been told to check out. And then Chariot watched it really fast. And it was like, it was so good. And then I was started watching it. And it was just like, this like very handsome boyish man shows up and like seduces every member of the family like one by one. And then I had this sense it ends badly, and I was like, I don't want to see this family. It was just like not I should finish it, right?
You should. Yeah, I mean it's so funny actually. It's like really humorous. I guess it doesn't end badly, but all the family members do, they have like their own subsequent like breakdowns or breakthroughs because of like them being like sexually like their sexual repression gets like blown away or like dissolved by this man who just like eventually leaves. And then yeah, it's fantastic. Somebody becomes a mystic and starts performing miracles.
I love
Wow.
it in
Okay.
movies
All
when
right.
somebody comes and opens everybody up sexually, then leaves. It's like,
Yeah.
thanks.
There other films that are like that?
I feel like it's on the tip of my tongue. One,
Titanic.
whoa.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like the guy from Teorema is kind of has a similar vibe to Leo in Titanic.
As he should, if he's going to seduce the whole family, he better be fucking
Yeah.
Leo.
The whole
Yeah.
family.
The whole family. I love that line, being a body around an anus. It's like, I've just never, you know, like obviously making the anus like the center point of like being, and then the body's just sort of around it. It's such an unusual imagery. It's just really incredible. You know, speaking of sexuality, like there's so much like sexuality in the book. And I just, you know, how, whatever degree you feel comfortable talking about how important that is to you in your poetry, and what you think, you know, maybe like how poetry lends itself to exploring the nuances of sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think sexuality is like one of the centerpieces of my poetry.
Mm.
Yeah. And like my art practice in general. And I think I think in my poetry and my life, sexuality serves a lot of different functions. And one of them being like I'm really interested in like the liberatory possibilities of sexuality and exploring sexuality, and also the relationship between oppression and fascism and also liberation and sexuality. Like it really, I mean, it's so deeply interwoven, like the fabric of, yeah, because like, you know, relations and also control as well. And so, yeah, I'm really interested in like thinking through those things and trying to like understand why. And so it's like, I don't know why yet, but I really like, I think, yeah, through the process of like writing poems, like I'm trying to get to some sort of thesis or answer.
Answer to why we're feel so oppressed sexually, or why one is the way one is, or something like that.
I think both, why we're so repressed sexually, and why, you know, and like laws and policy throughout history, there's like an obsession with sexuality.
Right.
And there's
right.
also like in the history of like in fascism too, there's so many instances of, there's a really interesting play to me between like homosexuality and fascism. And it's almost like, I mean, it's like a tool of it, and also something that like destroys it as well.
You mean homosexuality is a tool of fashion, or controlling sexuality is a tool of fashion? Fashion. Fascism.
No, both. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like homosexuality and also sexuality in general. Yeah. It's like a tool of fascism.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. I definitely felt the thread of the political throughout. I mean, it wasn't like banging me over the head, and it felt very naturally woven in. But like the other element, of course, is religion. And religion also is traditionally used sexuality as a way to control people. But there's also no doubt that sexuality seems incredibly linked to spiritual ecstasy.
Yes.
So tell me about that. Tell me about your explorations of spirituality, and Fama, you can jump in on this too, as it is important to your poems or your life, exploring yourself.
I think there's some point in my life where I got really into Christian mysticism, and then and I was deduced somehow that spiritual union with God was having sex with God. Like that was the thing. It was like this, yeah, cosmic orgasm, and like it was like maybe a metaphor, but also an analogy, and also maybe that's exactly what it is. And that like really excited, like it's really exciting to me, and it's like really hot and sexy and like grand.
I know God's not some shameful thing, but more like a celebration of sexual feelings.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, yeah. So, and I think there's a lot, you know, in my experience, I was raised Catholic, and a lot of my in that culture, the body is sort of, I mean, it's put in a place where it's like not, it's not necessarily like that important or something, where it's like, you know, it's like reaching towards like getting to heaven. Like that's like the idea. And like, you're living your life, like trying to get to this place. But then to me, it's like, you know, the body's how you experience God and like earth and like the creation and like the gifts that God brings. And I said this as a believer, I guess. Yeah. I'm definitely not a non-believer or an atheist.
It's interesting that like I'm rewatching the show The Young Pope right now, and sexuality is so involved. And you know, this Pope is like so against sexuality. He even goes so far as to like secretly hire people to tempt incoming priests to see if they would break a vow of chastity, and then like denying them entrance to the church. And it's a kind of a really upsetting to see. I was also raised Catholic. I wonder if that does influence my like feast or famine idea of like a total celibacy versus like just being a total slut and like not finding comfort in a middle ground. And this chap, Chariot, the sex is so matter of fact. It's not like a horny book. It's necessarily, it's like a book that gets laid a lot, though. I think it's kind of different.
That's funny. I never picked up on that, but that seems true.
A book that gets laid a lot.
There was, when I was working, when I started this collection, I was like, I have to start having more sex to write the poems that I want to write.
Oh, and yet you never saw that. You never saw that in the book. You're like, but it has nothing to do with the poems. Yeah. That's really interesting. So you tell me about the origins of creating this book. You set out to start a collection, a chapbook collection.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, my ultimate vision is a full length that surround these themes. And all of them I wrote in Ben's Cool Memories workshop. Going into it, I've been studying this like self-created syllabus that's about fascism and homosexuality and like anus theory. Theories around the anus as a site of like liberation, and also like deconstructing capitalism and also watching movies surrounding that and like empire and homosexuality and criminality. And I was like, you know, I was like, this is what I want to write about and talk about and investigate.
So read us one of the poems that you feel like speaks to that.
This one's called "What I Want Is All Out War." Reaching over his waist for the fly of his jeans, tangerine unpeeling, four moons cut and halved. There is no planet Earth, just a fat, wet ball hanging between two holes. Take the nightingale, roll the hot part of him in my hand. We were talking about the tradition of communists in Italy. He said, yeah, but the fascists still won. I said, God isn't here anymore. Later, he lifted my cunt to his tongue, had me spit in his mouth while I jerked off over him. This is all I know how to do anymore. I take it seriously. It's not about lack or filling the lack. It's about the energy of desire. There is no earth but a swollen, sinking spirit. I see that one too as a companion piece to Teorema.
Yes. Yeah, all your poems speak really beautifully to one another. And this, it's funny because this last line reminded me a little bit of another last line in here, which was, the first poem, "The world isn't a wound even when it looks like one," versus "There is no earth but a swollen, sinking spirit." It's almost like you have this great way of showing the dual nature of our experiences, that on one hand, you know, unfair and devastating things happen, but also that there's so much hope and spontaneous joy too. And I think also a casual nature I think that Ben pointed to before in the poems. But they never despair utterly. And I really loved the celebration that happens in each one, even though it's talking about complex things that are, you know, like fascists, I guess, or maybe even complicated relationships.
There's a lot of like contradictions. I see, even too, there's like, I talk a lot about like God not being there, but also God being there, angels being present, but also
it's
like
really interesting, like what you just said, Bianca, about the like devastating things happen, but there's also hope. Like on the back of the book, there's a line singled out, what God or angel would look to see this? And it's like, there's bad things happening without consolation. It's like, who, not even could like justify this, but like, would there be a like creative force that would even witness like what they've wrought? And then balancing that with the dedication for all true lovers and the possible world.
Yeah, it's like there's this possibility that we are not watched by God and we are not, you know, guarded by angels. I don't think that book is saying this at all, but it's saying, you know, it's acknowledging our own autonomy and possibilities as people. I think it's taking a lot of responsibility in that way, while also having a great connection with the spiritual. And that's kind of unique. I mean, not a lot of people are able to go in both directions. You know, it's like they feel like it's like you're comfortable with your beliefs and your feelings. So you've been taking Fama's Cool Memories workshop for a while. I know he's doing them on a rolling basis. So awesome. And he's such a great teacher.
Thank you.
When did you really know you wanted to write poetry and write books?
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing poetry my whole life, like in elementary school and middle school.
Yep.
It was something I had this like Spider-Man notebook and I would just fill it. Like every day I'd write a poem or two. Yeah. And it was like my prized possession. I went to school for photography and that's where my interest in books really became like a driving force of like my creative practice. So a lot of photography like exists to be like, you know, it's like the book as an object, like an art object. It's like, it's a lot about that. And like, and collecting and curating and curating a body of work that like speaks to each other. And I was still writing through all of that. And then I started taking writing classes, like supplementary as like my electives. And then I found this online community of other writers and poets who are like playing with like internet language. And that was really exciting to me. And so I got, and that's when I got like more serious about doing it.
Because you found the people that spoke to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. And then started, through that, it was like getting recommended poetry books and finding, other, poets throughout the tradition that I was like, this is, it's just incredible. There was about a year somewhere, like 2018, 2019, where I was like, maybe this is like not what I'm gonna do. And then, last year I was like, wait a second, I'm a poet. and this is what I'm gonna do. Like this is what feels like what, I have to do. Cause I think, it's like being a poet, poetry is like the most, it's like the most corny, it's like such a corny thing to be, is what? A poet.
No, you think so?
I do think so, but I think it's also the most astounding thing too, because it's like the kind of like bravery of being like, I'm gonna do this thing that is like, I like misunderstood or kind of seen in this like specific way that is, in terms of like all the kinds of artists there are, it's poets. It's But I think it's like divine for that reason, where it's like, okay, I'm going to commit myself to this thing.
Yeah. I know. And you're like, what is it? It's like, I get it and I love it and I know it and my people know it, you know, like, but then
I want to ask a question if I could.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Circling back. So Bianca was sort of asking about Chariot's origin story. And I want to ask one more question there. Because, you know, we're talking about the themes of this chat of sexual experience, spirituality, and sort of being of earth at a distance from God and the angels. And I think my question would be, Chariot, have you expressed yourself in other artistic genres? Have you done that before poetry? And also, do you see yourself having like poetic predecessors, or like mom and dad poetry, mom and dad, the many gendered mothers of our heart
has been a word. Yes, I wish it. Yeah, we'll see. First, yeah. So I make large drawings as well. Yeah, I don't know what would be like draftsman. I don't know the term.
Use like ink or?
I use graphite.
Graphite, okay.
Yeah, I make like large graphite, like 5-foot graphite drawings. And they're very similar in the poems, where it's like heavenly imagery tied with insurrectionary politics and sexual politics. It's a lot of angels, kind of like William Blake-esque, which I think William Blake would be like one of my like predecessors in that way, to like poetry and in the drawing and the drafts, the paintings. Federico Garcia Lorca is one for sure. Yeah, and his like, I mean, you know, he's like his personal politics in his life, but in his, you like mysticism and relationship to like the earth and landscape.
And more contemporary poets?
Ariana Raines, definitely.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, her newest collection like really like changed a lot for me, or shook me a lot poetically.
The Sand Book?
Yeah, Sand Book. Yeah.
Sand Book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. I do see that. So, Fama, I wonder if you would read us a poem.
Could I read the one that was in Iterant magazine?
I would love that if you did that.
Okay. It's called Glass Halo.
Yes.
Supplication, the blown out surf, and a beach party tonight. Past the blue house with the lilies. To love them is to leave them in bloom. What am I going to do now? Radio 104 distorts. God's in those waves, in the back of beyond. Saying a prayer is like reading a poem into a wishing well. In the shade by the dunes, wet dust replete with suffering. Blessed are the poor in spirit, as such, the riches of imagination, affliction. Last sunrise of May, we are apart, so two cold mornings. Mistress to my morals, exalted by what stretched them. Show me the poetry that makes life worth living. The tragic in people are the obvious things they don't see in themselves. Hard to find what you want. Let's take a moment there. Power wash the deck to empty the mind of the image repertoire. I've been eating these candies you left behind, so unlike me, they're sour and don't last.
So beautiful.
I love that one.
Really wonderful. I'm just looking at it on Iterant right now. We made such a cute broadside of it.
So cute.
For sale. I mean, one of the lines that stands out the most is saying a prayer is like reading a poem into a wishing well in the shade by the dunes. Reading a poem is like saying a prayer too. There's, and in a wishing well as well. I was thinking about the word fantasy and fantasies and you know, reading both of you guys' poems. I'm wondering how we think about wishes and fantasies and our imaginative or it seems different than simply being imaginative. Fantasies are closer to something more like wishes, perhaps. But I don't know exactly how the question is formulated, but like it's something like, how does fantasy fit into your poetry? Is it do you think about it as something that's important, or even something that's in your poems, or maybe you're writing about the idea of fantasy more than the actual fantasies themselves?
I could jump in for sure. I mean, I've actually come to see fantasy as a not very useful force in my life. Mm. And my first book was called Fantasy. And for many years, I thought the investments I had and the ideas and I guess hopes and like the narratives I believed in were like the engine that pushed me through much of my life, and like much of my 20s and early 30s were that way. And, you know, I was like in love with those stories that like love and intoxication and like the artist's life. Mm. Was the divine. And I've kind of stepped away from being so attached to that. And I tend to like try to move in a more detached, neutral way towards those things as experiences to have, but not necessarily ones to try to think about what it would be like if things were different, and how mm. to like nudge the world around me more to my liking. But it was a lot of pain down that road to get to that point. Mm. One thing Chariot's book does so well is like explain a person existing in the present. There's not like a lot of longing in Chariot's poems. They're sort of like just sort of in situations. You know, Why Don't Rivers Disappear, a poem in Chariot's book, starts, "I'm passing by in leg high grass, open the sky through to me." And it's, you know, just kind of has like a like the spirituality is just in the being present. It's in the attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I'm drawn to a lot in Chariot's work. And you know, I used to always have, you know, Robert has this line like, longing we say because desire is full of endless distances.
Ah, oh, and that's so great.
Such a beautiful line, and it really stung when I first heard it.
Well, desire is a whole other word.
For sure.
You know, there is something kind of painful about fantasies.
That they're sort of like wish, like fulfillment, like imaginations of how our desires could be fulfilled, that like it kind of starts to satisfy them in a small way, but also kind of like
at the sake of reality,
salts the wound a little bit. It's hard to explain, but yeah, definitely what it does to reality is makes it so you only be disappointed by reality.
That's like, actually, I have a line
in
one of my poems.
You totally have a great line about reality in your.
It says, "In this dying world, all fantasy withers under the weight of reality." Yeah.
St. Francis has a line, "Blessed is he who expects nothing, for he won't be disappointed."
Right. Well, I think, you know, there's so much play in fantasy. Like, it can be fun, yeah, when you're luxuriating the fantasy. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, kind of it's like, how do you reach the understanding of, like, at what point does it, yeah, become, like, heart-wrenching, or, like, a disappointment, or a letdown, or, like, delusion? And, like, is fantasy creative or not? I don't know.
I think, yeah, like, are you just sort of like living in your own head and not it's not serving your life? You're not moving towards something, you know, like, right. There's like the fantasy that's like, in a way, like a guide towards the life you want to live. And you can take action according to that, or, you know, this is what I want sexually, and so I'm going to actually find that sexually. Or is it like, you're just fantasizing about it, and that's where it ends. Mm-hmm.
There's like a humble, like, this is what I want, and I might, you know, to get from A to B, these are like some things I could try to do in like good faith. And then there's like, I'm fantasizing that this happens, and then you start to believe you deserve it, and then like, if you don't get it, you like don't want it later. It's like now or never.
Right.
I tend to have that kind of fantasy. It's like a childish, very like, if I can't have it now, I don't want it, and I want it the way I need it to be.
Right. It can, nothing can live up to the fantasy. So you're always dissatisfied. In a way, it's a way to avoid the disappointment of living and, you know, or love or anything like that. And if we try, we may fail. And whereas in the fantasy, you never fail. You always have it exactly how you want it. Well, let's hear another poem. Chariot. I loved Earth Will Break Your Heart and Intelligent Dance Music, which is on the page next to it. If you want to read one of those, that's my vote.
Yeah. Earth Will Break Your Heart. I take myself on the bed, panties at my ankles, stir my pussy with the air, an angel slices through. In this dying world, all fantasy withers under the weight of reality. Actually, the eternal soul isn't wretched, and it is the greatest joy to be in the space of totality, a decaying body, an infinite spirit, oh sunshine in an empty place.
A decaying body, an infinite spirit, oh sunshine in an empty place. God, I was just reading Robert Bly this morning because he just died, and he's like so ecstatic all the time about things, and it's like it will be like a decaying body next to, you know, a blossoming plant, and sort of celebrating the both the cycles of life. But this is just, you know, earth will break your heart, you know, things must die, and yet there is an infinite nature to it. Sunshine in an empty place, but still sunshine.
Yeah, you know how heartbreakingly beautiful it is to experience all of that.
Yeah. And to start with this, such an eroticism, followed by an angel slices through is, you know, there's so much ambiguity there about what that means, but the slices through is like, there's something obviously semi-violent about that. But equally, it sort of like cuts through things and hits at the core, it feels like, to every angel is terrifying.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I had a friend say that to me recently and was like, angels are so scary. I had never thought of that. I always thought of them as like, you know, like graceful and beautiful and like these like signs. And I was like, wait, you're right. I was like, that is terrifying. Angels are scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like that angel imagery, it's like, you know, they're like signs for something else. And like that thing is actually quite terrifying. But powerful too. Yeah, I think.
So when editing this book, what was the editing process like?
So, yeah, I mean, they'd all been went through the workshop and editing. I just put them all into a document and then.
Let's pause for a second.
Yeah.
You all of these poems that are in the chapbook, it's a relatively short chapbook, 20 pages, pretty standard. They all went through the workshop. Do you find that you end up making a lot of changes after workshop?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Yeah. That's always like a really comforting thing to hear, that workshops. I mean, obviously it has been paying off because you've been taking it continuously. And do you often have the same recurring colleagues in the workshop that whose opinion you trust?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are quite a few. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is something I love with the cool memories too, where it's like really a community of people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, throughout the weeks and also taking more of them, the same people come up and you get really familiar with each other's work and like the vision and like the lexicons that we all have.
That's so great. So it's pretty essential for you to have that readership before it.
Yes.
Okay, so continue on.
Yeah, and before taking the workshops, I was never one to like edit after I wrote a poem. Like I would kind of edit as I was writing and then I would have the finished thing.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah,
and then I learned the art of editing and I was like, oh, this is actually one of the most important parts of the process.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that's something that was like, you know, Ben is such a great teacher and his eye for like what a poem could become.
Mm-hmm.
And honing in on like what what the heart is, and like what the meat of is,
yeah,
of the poem is, and getting to that, and how to expand or like contract so that, you know, they really they like blossom.
It's so important to have a teacher who can do that, or, you know, someone to do that for you, with you. So you'd finished that, you'd been editing them after the workshop, and then you started to assemble the book. And then you and Ben went through another round of edits, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben and I went through a round of edits, like fine tweaking the poems themselves, and also cutting, like, I think it maybe sent over like 30 poems, like 30 pages. And then we cut it back. And then from there, like, I think edited them further. And I had another friend look at them too. He was like editing I Trust. And we like unedited through that also.
So a lot of different drafts happened.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised to see another name in that editing draft, but so be it. I guess the more the merrier, but
oh yeah, I was wondering about that.
I think we also looked at the order, like what was going to be the good first poem, a good last poem, and I think maybe suggested some to be saved for a later light collection that, even if they were strong, didn't necessarily fit in this chap.
Yeah, that's always a big moment.
We moved some chunks of things around in the poems as well.
Mm-hmm. Some of them got cut down a lot. Some of them were
really long. Got into it. I think that most of the line edits had been settled by then. But the class chariot was in was really special. I wanted to move some people who were in New York that were online doing the online workshop into an in-person one. Because I could just tell they were really serious about it. And so we started meeting, and then I would kind of just draft people from online that once they'd taken it and I felt they were a good fit for in-person, we'd bring them to our Friday evening class. So we kind of had a cool Dead Poets group. And the cadence of like feedback just really got locked in. Mm-hmm. And they're all doing really cool stuff. You know, it takes a long time to learn how to edit yourself and to build up your intuitions. And, you know, I see people get better week by week, but publishing moves very slow. And, you know, the life of an artist is very long. But, you know, just like being around people doing the same thing as you as an artist, like, is what I think makes writers most happy. And, myself as well. So it's important for me to be able to create those things for people. And it was great to see these poems when they first came in, and then from when they ended up in these more final form.
Has your as editing wonder for almost what 10 years now?
Yeah, we're about to turn 10 this summer.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Many presses come and go, and you stayed strong. Has your editing style changed over the years? Have you learned a lot, or has it stayed pretty consistent in how you?
My style has, I'd say, probably stayed pretty consistent. I mean, I try to honor what the writer has done. I think like, it's important for both the writer and I to look at the manuscripts for what they are and like bring out the strengths of what they want to be.
Yeah.
And bring our attention to that rather than like, it's kind of the same with fantasy. Like you can want the book to be a certain thing, but the reality is going to be much different. And if you are attentive rather than forceful, you can bring out the best things in the book. And, you know, every manuscript has its own rules that you learn when you get really into it. And, I'm not the best editor for everyone, even if I'm like really close with them. Like Rachel Rabbit White, good friend of mine, I worked with her on her manuscript for years, but Elaine Kahn, who's also a friend of Rachel's, they just have a better editing relationship. Mm. And so Elaine actually edited that book. Rachel would send me individual poems and she was working on them and I would make suggestions and stuff. But running a press is a lot like allowing those cool things to happen.
Yeah. And not like making it about your ego.
It's definitely, yeah, it's not about me at all. I mean, also, the last thing I'll say about Wonder is like, we don't really have a house style. A lot of presses have house style, all the covers are kind of the same or something. And I think that's kind of corny because then, like, the reference becomes the press. And it's like you collect all the books by the press. But, you know, Wonder could go belly up next weekend. And I would like these books to have a long life. So it was important for me to let every project kind of take on its own existence, that like it will be able to live on if Wonder isn't here anymore. So that's why our books don't necessarily all have like the same trim size or cover style. I mean, I think it's important to honor the work. And with Chariot's cover, I think we had a few iterations. But knowing like we were working with like looking at our past chaps and what the printer could do, working within those confines and coming up with something that looked really good. And this is really cool sketch. I don't know, Chariot, do you want to describe this cover?
It was originally a graphite drawing, and then in Ben and I were like, oh well, you know, we want it to be like, you know, black and white, or you know, more graphic, to fit in more with like the other Wonder titles. But it was, yeah, as my friend drew it, and we have like really similar visual language. And yes, yeah, so I asked them to do it. And well, yeah, I have this tattoo that they did where it's like this sexy girl with guns and it says nurse. And that was kind of like my vision. I was like, oh, that would be really cool for the cover. And I sent them the book and they read it, and then yes, like drew this up. And there's like a little pansy and like a butterfly.
I love it. I was like, I let every book do its own. Then I was like, it has to fit the wonders that it.
Well, yeah.
And it's red and black.
And it's red and black.
Why is that, Chariot Wish?
For communism and anarchy.
But before we go, I just wondered if you each wanted to say something about why you think poetry is important to read.
There's like, you know, I was reading a lot of antinatalism recently, which is like the harm of coming into existence, and like there's more bad things than pleasures in the world, and sort of like what like ethical concerns are there to like bringing a new being into existence. And it really like had me getting down to like the idea of like, what does it mean to be a human? What are the things we value? And if you really look at the balance sheet of like good things and bad things, I think most people would agree that like there are more bad things in general. And like worrying, you know, like illnesses, afflictions, just in general. And you know, most people only kind of have an okay life, and like, you know, struggle with mental illnesses and things like that. And it didn't like turn me into a nihilist or anything, but it did actually kind of make me turn around and think about like goodness as like an unquantifiable thing that was missing from that equation. And it was like what about goodness? Because like, if God is goodness, and like that's how we see the divine, through like the good in other people. And like then like engineers can keep our roads together and like keep planes in the sky, but like who gives a shit if there's like nothing good coming from any of that, you know? And poetry, I see, is part of a larger process that just like gives transcendent value to the otherwise profane things. So that's what I would say.
That's so beautiful.
So beautiful, and I agree. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. I think to me, like, poetry is like the lyric of like the human spirit and the heart. And through that lyric and like music, you know, like it's not like literally and also I guess spiritually, it's like, yes, yeah, a form of like connecting, and yes, yeah, like expressing, you know, the personal experience, but also speaking to this like large, like this like wider thing, and yeah, trying to really describe beauty, and wretchedness as well. And I think, you know, the tradition is one that is towards, that's like grand communication between humans.
Right.
Yeah. And that's invaluable.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like without communication, knowing this as one who tends, as I'm sure you two as well, tends to isolate and then realize how important communication is mm-hmm. to mental well-being and thriving and goodness. And communicating not just the beautiful, but the wretched as well. Yeah. I agree. You know, both those things need to be expressed desperately and in all their seemingly opposites, but that they both are simultaneous at the same time. We need some outlet to express that. And I love it that you said the lyric of the spirit or something like that. And it does seem to be what poetry is expressing. Lyrical communication. Well, thank you both so much for talking to us today about poetry. And I just love this chapbook so much, Chariot. And I will put a link on the show notes to be able to purchase it. And I would love it if you just sang us out with a final poem.
Yeah, and say thank you so much for having us and for all of your observation and kind words. It really makes it feel really worth it. Or to have it seen. So
my pleasure, absolutely.
This poem's called "Hope This Season of Life Finds You Well." I take all that I can fit from the soft hand of the sun. How can I behave when earth looks like this? Birds spilling out the hothouse of morning. At the beginning of earth, there was a hole in the ground. In night's darkness, there was a hole splayed out and open. It was night's tiny darkness, always coming through. I feel like it's a hidden place where people go to hide bodies. My eyes won't stop funneling information into my brain. The dimensions are falling apart. A portal is blooming. There was a hole, peace-spangled, shining, pulsing. Heavenly hot, the secret root, the wet heart, the open nerve of the earth. I took out the little boat, prayed between daytimes. Why did God make me perfect? Beautiful, insane, like a blizzard. This is what I need in my life. It was the birth of the universe, and I was by the ocean, fussing with my hair. You were always on my mind. Bondage, dominance, friendship, money. I feel the influences of the planet strongly. I'm being whipped sideways, naked in the prairie. I'm whipped by the left-leaning light. I want to come out from the other side, like a fountain at the beginning of Earth. Play the song at my funeral if I have one. Time is a ritual. In the fabric of night, there's an entrance where the grass lifts up in fountainous, sweeping light. And there are seven doves in the sky floating like pink ribbon. I wonder how many years it will take for it to disintegrate. Silk slapping the air at all hours, a ribbon in the wind. You might be by the ocean. Me, I'm licking the juice from my wrist. Me, I'm on a boat. I'm underneath the trees as well. Come into me deeper. Look for me here. The inside of your car. Where will you spend eternity? You be good. See you tomorrow. I love you.